We got over 1,700 migrants that died in U.S. soil. We have a historic number of women and children that have been trafficked, sex trafficked across the border this year. We got over 100,000 Americans dead from fentanyl overdoses. The DEA says 95% of that fentanyl is coming across the open southwest border. These are the facts. So where are they now? So not only is the media not covering it, the elected representatives aren't covering it.
Hey guys, check out the 2023 Street Cop Conference, April 23rd through the 28th, Gaylord Convention Center. It's going to be the event of the year. Keynote speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Medal of Honor recipient, Navy SEAL Jason Redmond, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Marine Corps Special Forces and Leadership Coach Cody Alford, Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff David Clark, and Sheriff Mark Lamb. It's going to be one hell of an event. And on top of that, we have all of our instructors and additional instructors from other companies going to be at the event, giving you everything they know for you to have a successful career and get the results you want to get in the field as a police officer. On top of attending the event, you'll get face-to-face time with every instructor attending the event, and all the keynote speakers will spend time with you. We got special events all week, giveaways, nightlife. It's going to be really, really worth your time, energy, and effort. I promise you, you will not regret it for a second. To register for the conference, check out streetcop.com, click conference, and everything you need will be there on the homepage. If you are looking for a room, just click book a room. The block has been sold out at the Gaylord Opryland Convention Center, but there are many hotels nearby within a walking distance of the event. You don't want to miss out on this opportunity. We will see you there.
111.
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and we're lucky enough to have Tom Homan with us today. He is the former director of ICE under the Trump administration, an avid law enforcement supporter. You know, we don't go into politics too much here at this company. We really stay focused on what's important to us overall. We understand there are Democrats and Republicans who support law enforcement, so we're never painting anybody with a broad brush. But there are some issues that are discussed that are just truthful. So without further ado, I think Tom makes a lot of good points. And at the end, you're going to see that he really expresses his admiration for the work that the men and women in blue do every single day. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. Enjoy. Tom, tell us about you. Where did you grow up? How did you get into law enforcement? Where did you start? I met you one time, and I'm sure you don't remember me, but there was a Night to Unite where you talked, I believe, in North Jersey by the Brothers Before Others group. And I was there. I heard you talk there. It was cool. Cool little event. I enjoyed that event a lot, actually. I wish they would do it again, but they haven't. But tell us about you. Maybe people don't know your background and how much experience you have.
Well, I'm from upstate New York. I grew up in a small town right outside of Fort Drum, New York. So real patriotic part of the country. Where I grew up, everybody had an American flag on the front porch. And Fort Drum was the main employer for the entire Tri-County area. So, very patriotic, grew up in a big family full of, seven kids. And my grandfather's a cop in that area, so it wasn't my father. And so I chose the same. So I began my law enforcement career up there in upstate New York. I was a cop, and I was a cop like 2 years. Then I became a Border Patrol agent. And I never thought I'd be a Border Patrol agent because I didn't know what they did, man. You see them up there in upstate New York on the Canadian border. Didn't really know what they did. And one afternoon, I'm fishing on Lake St. Lawrence River, me and a couple of police officer buddies of mine, and a Border Patrol pulled up in a boat, docked it, and we just started talking. And sounded interesting. So I ended up taking the test. And 6 months later, I'm a Border Patrol agent. I'm at the Border Patrol Academy. And I enter in 1984, I became Border Patrol agent in San Diego sector. At Campbell Station. Campbell Station was a one rural station on top of a mountain, very small station. I think there was 30 of us at the entire station. So I started in Border Patrol in 1984. And after several years there, I became a special agent, a criminal investigator. And I climbed the ranks through ICE, from the frontline Border Patrol agent to the director. President Trump made me the director of ICE. I was the first director of ICE that came up through the ranks. I mean, I started out as a Border Patrol agent, a special agent, climbed the ladder, hit every rung, about nine of those rungs, became a special agent, supervisor, special agent, assistant director, a director, then went to headquarters. So I've had just short of 35 years from starting the board to when I retired as director of ICE. So I've been around the immigration enforcement game for the 34 and a half years. So that's how it started. You know, it just, I climbed the ladder. I was one of those guys that I did a lot of moved my family 6 or 7 times across this country. And I was proud. My proudest moment in my career was actually being nominated as the secretary, the director of ICE by President Trump. Because again, I was the first director in that agency ever that came up through the ranks. Usually you get the head of the FBI, head of the ATF, head of DEA, they're usually some attorney that did favors for the campaign, and you know, then they get rewarded with a nice job. And but I actually came up through the ranks. Matter of fact, I actually retired, and I announced my retirement in late 2016 because I was convinced Hillary Clinton was going to win. And I just spent 8 years with Obama trying to enforce immigration law. I announced my retirement, gave 120 days notice. And then President Trump won. And but I already signed a contract making about 3 times as much as I did as ICE director. And it was actually at my retirement ceremony in January 2017. At my retirement ceremony, at the end of the ceremony, my chief of staff came up to me and said, "You got an emergency phone call in your office." Now, my office is already empty. Boxes already sitting at home. I was going to start this new job on Monday. Again, making a hell of a lot more money. And I went to my office with John Kelly, who was the Secretary of Homeland Security on the phone, said that President Trump wanted me to postpone my retirement and stay and run the agency, which was a 3-step promotion. I was third in command at the time. So that following Monday morning, I'm back at ICE and as a new director. And within 24 hours, I'm at Air Force One with President Trump talking about what he wants me to do. And his instructions were real, real clear. He says, "You know the law. I want you to enforce the law. That's what I want you to do." And that's real easy because, you know, we all knew what the law said. We all done it for 30 some years. So President Trump, he says, "There's law. There's laws for a reason. Enforce laws. And secure the border." And that's exactly what we did.
Why do you think he wanted you to come back and not retire? Why do you think you were selected?
You know, I know they did the 411 that you're trying to find out who's, you know, who knows the game. Like I said, I've been around the game for 3 decades. I had the morale at ICE at the time in the division I oversaw the enforcement removal operations. Morale was at an all-time high based on the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey. Because I let guys do their job, despite the Obama administration trying to stranglehold us, I refused. I said, "This is the law. We're going to force the law. I'm not a politician. I don't care about politics. I don't care about scoring points with administration. We got a job to do, and we're going to do it." So I did it. I took a lot of backlash because of it, but I didn't apologize. I did it. And I think he did his little research, and obviously, the secretary who I worked very well with, John Kelly, knew me and knew what I was all about. So I'm certainly convinced that he probably had a discussion with the president. But I was honored to come back again as the first director of ICE. I actually came up through the ranks, which means the 20,000 men and women that worked for me, I never asked them to do a single thing. I didn't do myself. I did the job. I was a special agent. I did those criminal investigations. I've arrested illegal aliens. I did just about everything the agency's done as an agent. So I had no problem stepping into the ranks of the director because I understood the job better than any other director ever had because I did the job. And I think if you look at what Trump did across the spectrum, he took career guys, especially law enforcement, took career law enforcement guys and gave them leadership positions because they knew the job. President Trump loves law enforcement. I mean, when I retired, I wrote a book called Defend the Border, Save Lives. I talked to 20 or 30 detectives in New York, you know, Bernie Carrick, the detective squad, the armed robbery squad. I talked to a lot of people in New York, cops, and not one of them would say a bad word about President Trump. They would talk about, you know, they have these boxing matches once a year, you know, fire department versus police, or the hockey matches, fire department versus police. They said Trump would show up at all. He's not even running for office now. He just a guy running his business, and he'd drop a 6-figure check at every event. At 9/11, they said that he would spend, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of of getting, you know, cots and sleeping bags and food to all those people working the site of 9/11. He didn't look for fanfare. He wasn't looking for TV cameras. He did it all behind the scenes. And I started hearing these stories about how he loved law enforcement. And every time I talked to two detectives that worked right outside the Trump Tower, that was their area. And they said that whenever the president walked out of Trump Tower, saw a uniformed police officer, he'd walk up, shake their hand, and thank for the service. He tapped them on the back, make sure they had their vest on. And he told them, said, look, you guys want something to eat? You're hungry? You get hot? Walk in the towers here, go to the cafeteria, get something to eat. Which is, you know, most of the people in the Trump Tower cafeteria wearing $5,000 suits, and the officers felt a little intimidated walking in there and eating. But it got to the point where NYPD in uniform was seen in the Trump Tower cafeteria all the time because President Trump, who again wasn't the president at the time, cared about the cops. So go in there and, you know, get a soda and get in the air conditioner for a few moments, and because you know they're wearing a bulletproof vest and it's hot human in New York. So everybody I talked to in law enforcement said he loved law enforcement. He's a big supporter of law enforcement. So when he became the president, I think, you know, he didn't change. He supported law enforcement. He promoted guys that were in the game for a long time and thought they'd be the best at being a director.
You said when you were the director and all these changes were made, morale was high. How's morale now?
Well, there is no morale. Morale's in the tank. They're not allowed to do their jobs. I talk to officers almost every day. Not every day, but almost every day. They contact me through my website or through LinkedIn. And you know, I talk mostly to leadership, field leadership, like SACs, Special Agents in Charge, and field office directors that say that the morale is non-existent. They're not allowed to enforce the law. I mean, the Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, he's on record saying being in the country illegally on its own is not enough to be arrested. These guys enforce immigration law. So he just basically said, I don't care if you're here illegally or not. I don't care what the oath you took says. I don't care what your credentials say. You're not going to enforce immigration law. So I know a lot of officers, they got nothing to do. They report to work every day with nothing to do. And in the meantime, what's really sad is when they open the border and cause the chaos they did at the border, historic illegal immigration on the border, numbers like we've never seen before, people, and that's what everybody's talking about concentrating on, but people are ignoring the fact that he also shut down interior enforcement. So not only is millions coming in, no one's leaving because no one's being deported because no one's out there doing operations. He took them off work site. No, they say they care about trafficking of women and children. But another thing the secretary of this administration did is said ICE can no longer do worksite enforcement operations. In my days as a special agent, where do we find most victims of trafficking? During worksite enforcement operations, they were forced labor or they were forced into prostitution at a massage parlor. And we'd find victims of trafficking in these places and be able to help them and give them a victim of trafficking visa and put the bad guys in prison. Now ICE can't even walk on a worksite to do that anymore. So, you know, the administration says that they're concerned about A, B, and C, but they don't give officers the ability to investigate A, B, and C. So it's morale is terrible. It's non-existent. Border Patrol right now is down about 3,500 Border Patrol agents. They can't hire. They just had a hiring announcement last month. They're offering $10,000 signing bonus, an additional $10,000 to go to a hard location station. They can't hire. No one wants a job. I mean, who now wants to, you know, go to the academy for 20 months? One of the toughest academies out there, Border Patrol Academy, because not only do you have to learn constitutional law and all the things cops learn, right? The arrest techniques and high-speed chases and firearms, all this stuff. They got to learn another entire language. Mm-hmm. You got to learn how to speak Spanish. It's a tough academy. But who wants to be a Border Patrol agent, take that oath to enforce immigration laws in this country and secure the border? Then you get out there and you don't arrest people. You don't deport people. What you do is you process them. Drive them to an airport, put them on an airplane at taxpayer expense to go to the city of their choice. I mean, Border Patrol agents feel like tourist agents now. Matter of fact, I talked to a border agent about a month ago. He's been in for over 30 years. He called me one day and said that he got dressed that morning, and he says, and he's working a checkpoint, so he had a dress uniform on. He goes, I put my dress uniform on, make my gig line straight, and everything's looking good. He goes, for the first time in over 30 years, I looked in the mirror and I says, I am a part of the largest alien smuggling organization in the world, the United States Border Patrol. He goes, I can't enforce law anymore. I'm a tourist agent. I'm helping these people get to where they're going to go. even though it's a violation of the law. So the morale is non-existent.
Yeah, it's real troubling. And I don't think people clearly are informed appropriately, because if you're using mainstream media to ingest information, you're missing 95% of the story. But unfortunately, we're trained in this country, or the simple-minded, watch Channel 7, Channel 5. That's where they get their info. That's where they get judgment calls. And people I'm related to, even people closest in my life, do shit like that. I remember my parents saying to me one time, my father, who is outspoken, a son's a cop, right? Like, he's like, hey, you know, what do you think about these cops? Like, things are out of control. I'm like, Dad, there's 750,000 cops in this country. You saw two videos in the past 6 months on the news, and you're just doing what everybody else is doing. It's horrible. You know how many wonderful things go on every single day? Every 99.9% of these men and women show up every day with the intention of doing something great. They want to do something great, but that's not highlighted. Sometimes it is. It's not highlighted. It's not sexy. It doesn't make the news. So there are a lot of things going on at the border. I had a friend of mine. I went through Fletsy in 2004. He was a previous Border Patrol agent. He was telling us the stories of things were going on at the border that I don't know why it's completely unreported. He was telling us stories how they ground C-130s in the desert, right?
Because they're protecting this president, this administration, like they protect them during the campaign. And like I said, I'm not a politician. I don't like playing politics. But the fact of the matter is, you're exactly right. The majority of the media is not talking about what's happening on the border in a factual basis. And I can't tell how many people I know that don't even know there's a crisis on the border. And I tell them, I says, well, you know, what network are you watching? And they'll tell me the network. Like, the only one talking about what's happening at the border is Fox News, Newsmax, and some conservative radio shows are talking about it. You know, we're talking about in your podcast today, but, you know, you talk, the major networks aren't talking about it. And it's a tragedy because, you know, under Trump, and even the Democrat congressmen and senators are ignoring that. And what irritates me more than anything, you know, I've got arguments you've probably seen. I'm YouTube famous because some of the testimonies, but I went out with AOC. Just one example, during the Trump administration, two children died in the custody of the Border Patrol. And the Border Patrol found them. They were abandoned. They were in bad shape. Border Patrol did everything they could medically before the air ambulances got there and tried to save those two babies. And they died. Well, and two died within a week's time. I think it was a week or 10 days. And it was AOC and a bunch of the Democratic congressmen went down there screaming and yelling about how inhumane the Border Patrol were, that, you know, your two children died while they're in their custody. And technically, yeah, they're in their custody because they have them, but they're trying to save their lives, you got to say. They went down there raising hell. Of course, the media's all over it. Every news station in the world was down there about the inhumane Trump administration and men and women in the Border Patrol. And, but let's talk about today. Since Joe Biden's been president, over 1,700 migrants have died on U.S. soil, either drowned in a river, found abandoned in the desert, the highlands of Texas, and starved to death, heat exhaustion, whatever. 1,700, which is a record by far, not even close to any other year. Where are they now? Where's all these news stations talking about all these aliens that are dying now? Where's AOC and Castro and the rest of the Democrat congressmen went screaming down their head in press conference? Where are they now? Even they're ignoring the crisis. We got over 1,700 migrants that died in U.S. soil. We have a historic number of women and children that have been trafficked, sex trafficked across the border this year. We got over 100,000 Americans dead from fentanyl overdoses. The DEA says 95% of that fentanyl is coming across the open southwest border. These are the facts. So where are they now? So not only is the media not covering it, the elected representatives aren't covering it. And I got frustrated the other day. I did a Fox show, and I said, I'm getting sick and tired of the Republicans, too. They're down there. They do their dog and pony shows down on the border. What terrible thing this is, and we got to fix it. We got to fix it. And they go back to D.C. do nothing. Now, thank God, got people like Jim Jordan and Mark Green, our, you know, chairman of oversight committees, are going to start having oversight hearings. Jim Jordan's down there yesterday and today having a hearing. And Democrats aren't even showing up. But they need to have oversight hearings. So the oversight hearings are going to bring up facts. And hopefully American people will pay attention. We'll get a few more educated what's going on down there. But no one's talking about it. And, you know, I'm sick and tired of all these blogs. And, you know, I've been called a racist and a white nationalist because I enforced immigration law. Well, if I'm a racist for enforcing the law, what's that make Congress? They wrote the law. I'm not making it up. I just enforced the laws I was required to enforce. But here's what no one talks about. They want to talk about the inhumanity of the Trump administration. Well, when Trump was president, we had illegal immigration down 83%. 83% decline in illegal immigration, a 45-year low. So here's my question. Doctors Without Borders did a study that said 31% of women that make that journey to the United States through the cartels get sexually assaulted. 31%. So when President Trump had illegal immigration down 83%, how many women weren't being raped by the cartels? How many children weren't dying? How many migrants didn't die? How many Americans didn't die because the border was secure and fentanyl wasn't coming across in such huge quantities? How many billions of dollars did the cartels not make? How many women and children weren't sex trafficked in the United States? President Trump's policy saved lives, and the data proves it. But they want to call me inhumane and racist. No, we enforce the law. We secure the border, which is required by statute to secure the border. That is in statute. So when you take a job within ICE and Border Patrol, your job is to secure the border by law. But they switch the whole thing around and want to make it a racist game. And now they say their policy is much more humane. However, record numbers of people are dying. So someone needs to explain to me how that's humane.
The crazy thing is, when the truth surfaces, nobody's willing to sit and have the conversation. They want to run and hide from their poor decision making. It's wild.
I'm hoping with these oversight hearings, there's 24 or 26 Democrat congressmen that are going to have a tough re-election in 2024 because they're in districts that Trump won. So when they have these hearings and they're presented with evidence, stone cold solid evidence and testimony of what this administration has done, either they accept this evidence as fact and take a position that this border is vulnerable to not only illegal immigration, but to national security threats and criminals, or they keep hiding their heads in the sand. They have to speak to American people in a year and a half and up for re-election on why they ignored this crisis. So I'm hoping we present them the evidence, because the last 2 years, Congress hadn't had any oversight hearings on the border. They've ignored it. Now we can bring this evidence out. I'm working with Jordan and Green. I'm telling them who to subpoena, what's the subpoena, where the bodies can be buried. I'm helping as much as I can. We present this evidence to these 24 vulnerable Democrats. They got to pick a side. And I'm hoping they'll pick the side of truth and evidence, because we're up for a tough re-election. And maybe we'll get a few Democrats to stand up and say, you're right, the border is out of control. And you're already seeing it. You got Mayor Adams in New York City speaking about the immigration crisis. You got Lori Lightfoot speaking about it. You got Governor Newsom speaking about it. So, you know, I think finally, because it affects them, because governors have delivered illegal aliens to their cities, for their sanctuary cities, now they're speaking up about it. So I think it's starting to crack open. These oversight hearings, I hope, will help solidify the case against this administration.
I often wonder if the cartels are actually infusing, through many channels, funds to ensure that these borders stay open and they can have free flow, free reign, because it's a multi-billion dollar industry. They have the money, they have the influence. I'm curious if behind the scenes, really dug deep, they would actually be the ones funding a lot of these people who are pushing these agendas.
Well, look, you got a lot of funding coming from people like Soros. And look, the United Nations, the IOM, it's an international organization of migration. This is part of the UN. They're down in Mexico giving cash cards, $600, $800 to these people to help them get across the border and get to their city. This is the UN helping, you know, help make it easier for these people to enter the country legally and escape apprehension. So there's a lot of hands in this. And there's even some Democratic Congress people who have had their staff down in Mexico talking about, you know, how to claim asylum. And this is, I'm hoping this all comes out in the next couple of years. And I hope some heads roll, because what they're doing is illegal and it needs to be brought out.
You ever get concerned being a part of this whole thing? You know, just knowing that, man, some of the shit that you see, there's got to be some validity to it. You ever get concerned for like personal safety or anything like that?
I'm concerned. As I said, you know, people on the left want to label me as racist, white nationalist, or whatever. Have at it. My wife asks me all the time, does it bother you that a big part of this country hates you? because you were forced immigration. I said, no, I don't give a shit. I mean, I did my job and I did it well. But I'm concerned about the migrants because, you know, the reason I wrote the book, Defend the Border, Save Lives, because like I explained to you earlier, a secure border saves lives. I've seen horrific things in my career. I mean, I've held dying children. I've held a dying 5-year-old that suffocated back of a tractor trailer. I've talked to young girls as young as 10 that were raped multiple times by these cartels. If people on the Hill, Congress, and some of these people on the left that hate me, if they saw what I saw in the last 35 years, they would understand me and they would agree with me. Everybody thinks illegal immigration is some victimless crime. It isn't. Illegal immigration is a whole ugly underbelly of this cartel activities of abusing these migrants, the most vulnerable people in the world. And this is what this administration did. They handed, you know, right now, we're the most powerful nation on earth, and we don't control our southern border. We don't have operational control of our southern border. That's just not my opinion. I've talked to chief patrol agents who remain anonymous. I fear they'll lose their job. One chief patrol agent used the term broken arrow. He told Tom, I can't control what's coming across. I'm maybe catching 10%. Criminal cartels in Mexico control have operational control of our southern border. They decide what comes across, when it comes across, and where it comes across. And what this administration did by opening the borders, I try to get people to understand. I don't care what your opinion is on illegal immigration. Maybe you support it, whatever. But when you cause a crisis this big, with 1.7 people crossing the border one year, to 2.4 the next, it overwhelmed the border patrol where in most sectors, 70 to 80% of agents assigned got pulled off patrol and into facilities to process, to deal with the backlog. When you take 70-80% of people off the line, that makes the border very vulnerable. The criminal cartels, look, I've done many investigations. I've read hundreds of intelligence reports. The criminal cartels send a large group, a 200 family groups or whatever, to one piece of the border, knowing that 20 or 30% of the agents left on the line will have to go to this area and seize on that moment to deal with that humanitarian crisis. So they create gaps. They know Border Patrol has to, whatever's left, got to go to this area where they just push this group through. So they create gaps on purpose, because when they create these gaps, that's when they push the criminals through. That's when they push the gangbangers through. That's when they can push non-suspected terrorists through. There's two sets of people coming across the border. Those that want to turn themselves into Border Patrol, they pay one rate to the cartels. It's easy. Just get us across the river and your work's done. There's another group that says, I don't want to turn myself in. I need to get to Chicago. So they pay a lot more money to that same criminal cartel to get to Chicago. People have to ask themselves, since Joe Biden's been president, there's 1.2 million known gotaways, recorded gotaways. These are people caught on video, sensor traffic or drone traffic that were recorded entering illegally, but Border Patrol wasn't able to respond because they're too busy in the facilities. Again, 20 or 30% only left on the line. 1.2 million people paid extra not to turn themselves in. So you got to ask yourself, who's that 1.2 million that didn't want to turn themselves in, get a free airline ticket to the city of their choice, get work authorization for at least the first 2 years while they wait their immigration hearing, and even if they lose their hearing, which 90% will, they won't be deported because ICE can't arrest them because they're simply here illegally. Who would not take advantage of that giveaway program at a reduced cost? Who wants to pay more to get to Chicago and not be turned themselves in board to take advantage of all these programs? Somebody don't want to be fingerprinted. That's who it is. So what should concern the people more than the 5 million encounters on the southern border are the 1.2 million gotaways. I'm telling you, they've arrested 153 known and suspected terrorists trying to enter this country. They're on a terrorist watch list. 153 since Joe Biden's been president, which is a record by far. Blows every record away. If they arrest 153, how many of 1.2 million are known suspected terrorists came here and do us harm? Border Patrol's arrested people from 171 different countries. Some of these countries are sponsors of terrorism. If anybody thinks not a single one of that 1.2 million gotaway didn't come from a country sponsoring terrorism, then you're ignorant. So getting back to, I don't care what your opinion on illegal immigration, when you cause a crisis this big with illegal immigration, it's a national security issue, it's a public safety issue, it's a public health issue. So all these problems are created because of this immigration crisis.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop Podcast, do us a favor and give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast. And it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally. And we also entertain you as well.
I think one thing people may not see about you, and I can hear it coming out of everything that you're saying, and this is kind of an interesting question, but on a personal level, how much compassion do you have for someone who is genuinely coming here to try to create a better life for them and their family? And I'm sure there's a ton of it. It's not me being some kind of weird setup. We're on the same page. We're on the same team. But what do you think about when you think about somebody who's escaping one of these countries that's under complete diplomatic insanity and is fleeing to try to come to this country for a better life? As the director of ICE, or even as a human being or Border Patrol agent, how much compassion do you have for somebody like that?
A lot of compassion. Look, that's the problem with what's going on the border right now. Here's the facts of what's happening on our border right now. These aren't my numbers. These are immigration court numbers. Immigration, United States Immigration Court, their data in the last 10 years says this. Those who claim asylum at our southern border, 9 out of 10 will fail in court because they simply don't qualify for asylum. Asylum is you escaping fear and persecution from your home government because your race, religion, political affiliation, or participation in a social group. For instance, if you're from a country that will kill you if you're homosexual. That's what qualifies for asylum, escaping fear and persecution from your home government because of race, religion, political affiliation. The facts are, if you're escaping fear and persecution from El Salvador and you get to Mexico, have you not escaped that fear and persecution from your home government? You have. So you should claim asylum in the first Greek country you come to. But they don't. It's not about asylum. 9 out of 10 don't qualify for asylum. They know they don't qualify, but they found a loophole. If they come to the United States, say asylum, they get let in. So we know based on immigration court data, 9 out of 10 don't qualify and will be ordered removed. Here's what the Homeland Security Lifecycle Report says. If you're in detention, you get an order removal from a judge. You're removed 99.7% of the time. If you're not in detention and you get order removal, you leave. If you're your family, you leave 6% of the time. So understand, that's why this administration is releasing people, not detaining them, because they know most will lose their case. But if they're not detained, they won't be found, sent home. But what irritates me, they clogged this system up so much with 5 million encounters on the border last 2 years. There are people in this world that really need our protection, and they're sitting in the back seat. They're caught up in this huge surge of fraudulent claims that tie up the immigration courts for years. Some of these cases won't be here 5-7 years. So that's what concerns me, because I have arrested people as a Border Patrol agent that were really are trying to escape fear and persecution from the homeland, that need our help. Some of the African nations, some of the European nations, these people need to get out. They need they need protection from this country, whether nationals of China, whether nationals of Iran, or whatever. There's a lot of people in this world that need our help. And they're sitting in the back seat because of the asylum fraud. Now, I can understand all these people committing asylum fraud, the 9 out of 10. I can understand them wanting to come to the United States to get a better life. I get it. But there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. And these people that are cheating the system are screwing the millions of people standing in line, doing their applications, taking their tests, taking their vaccinations and their physicals, wherever they require, trying to do things the right way per the immigration law. Now they're sitting there. They're not moving at all in the line because they're too busy dealing with people illegally entering. So there's people actually trying to do the right thing. Matter of fact, just a couple of months ago, I'm in New York City up there to do some Fox shows, and the transportation company picked me up the hotel and take me to the studio. The guy recognized me as being on Fox. He was from Nigeria. And he told me, he says, "Hey, I know you are. Can I talk to you, man?" I said, "Sure." It says, he's really irritated about all these people coming across the border and being allowed to stay here, not being detained, but being released. He says, "You know, I came here as a student because I love this country. I'm in the process of trying to immigrate my wife and 3 kids. I've been doing this for 4 years, going through the normal process, and I'm almost there. What is really irritating, I spent all this money and been away from my wife and kids for almost 4 years, trying to do things the right way. Meanwhile, I see all these family groups coming across being released the same day and reunited with their families in a day." He goes, "It makes me wonder why I'm trying to follow the legal system." And I said, well, because what you just said, you love this country. You can't love this country and not respect its laws. And that's what you're doing. This will all pay off in the long run. But he's just one guy I talked to. How many people are, their families are sitting in line trying to do things the legal way? How many people are sitting waiting for a visa to come to the United States to work? Maybe a technical wizard wants to work for Microsoft or something. There's a lot of people in this world that want to come to this country the right way. And they're sitting in the back seat now because of what's going on the southern border. So, look, I've seen a lot of tragedies in my career. My heart goes out to all these folks. But again, there's a right way and wrong way to do it. We cannot be the welfare nation for the entire world. What we need to do is help these countries thrive. And it's Congress's job. If we need that type of, if we need those type of workers here, then there's a system in place to do that. If you're a huge company, you need, let's say you own a series of produce farms in California, and you need more people to help with your produce. There's a system you apply H-2A to get people come in with a visa to work for you. Let's go the legal way instead of the illegal way. They got to understand when you do it the legal way, people will show up at port of entry with a visa and they'll come to work. They don't have to pay the cartels anything. They don't have to be, you know, they're not going to be put in their stash houses. The women aren't going to be sexually assaulted. Their whole life savings ain't going to be stolen by the cartels. So Congress needs to address, if we need that labor in the United States, then fix the program where more people come in faster through a legal process. But we can't support illegal immigration because it victimizes the most vulnerable people in the world. So I think Congress has some work to do. I think we have, but we got to secure the border first. Then we can look at ways to bring workers in if we need them. And the Department of Labor works very well. I mean, though, if someone wants to bring 30 foreign workers in to work on some IT project, they got to prove to the Department of Labor that we don't have U.S. citizens within the community systems do these jobs. So they take ads in the newspaper, they do radio, and if they get no response, they can't hire people, then they give that evidence to the Department of Labor. Department of Labor work with CIS, present them with some visa applications. There's a right way to do this. It can be improved. It can be improved greatly. But again, I can't blame anybody for wanting to be a part of the greatest nation on earth. But you can't be a part of this nation if you don't respect the laws. You can't have it both ways.
Sounds like the whole thing's a real mess.
Oh, it is. And they made it worse on this administration because rather than fixing the problems, they just made the problem 100 times worse. Because now we've got millions of people streaming across the border. We don't know who the hell they are. That 1.2 million, I've been doing this for, 35 years. I think what's happening on the southern border right now, the 1.2 million gotaways, is going to end up being one of the biggest national security failures we've seen since 9/11. Wait and see.
It's frightening. And there's this thing in my mind that's the same thing over and over again. Like, see, we told you so. Like the defund your police thing. I find it very interesting that, again, as we spoke about earlier, some of these people who are pushing this agenda, politicians, namely for the most part, hold no culpability, because what that did was that defund the police idealism was create much more of a impact on this country than you actually think about. Because for the first time since I've been goofing off in this profession for about 22 years, they can't get anybody to do this job. And when they can't get anybody to do this job, they lower standards. We saw in New Orleans, the police chief came out and said, hey, if we told you in the past you didn't qualify, we want to encourage you to come back and reapply because we've lowered our standards. Then what do you get? You get a situation like Memphis. So you get that defunding, right? Let's talk about even the defunding side of it. So now you got low enrollment. Nobody wants the job. You're going to lower your standards even more. You're going to have less trust now, less professional cops. Now you got to toss more money at it, $10,000, $20,000, $15,000 moving bonuses. They're starting at $90,000 a year. Now, I will also advocate that I think cops deserve a lot more money than most of them get. So I'm okay with that. But the reality is what these politicians have done is they've actually cost the taxpayers so much on this idea of defund the police. So you got that to start with. Then on top of it, you've removed billions of dollars out of these major metropolitan cities. You got people fleeing, going to Florida, Tennessee, Alabama, states where they know those governors aren't going to take BS. Then on top of it, because there's no money, because there's no personnel, we're a police training company, they can't send people to training. So we're dealing with something as a police training company where, fortunately, we have resolutions because we're a nimble company, but we can't get people to come to training because there's no manpower, because nobody's there to work the road. So our numbers are down 30, 40% in our classes, and we're our company has grown tremendously, but we hear the same thing over and over again. We can't let anybody go to training because we have nobody to work the road, because nobody will take the job, because nobody wants the job, because of what the media and these politicians have done and painted the police like they're bad guys. It's a disaster. And then you get a situation like Memphis, and you say, well, they should have known better. You are all responsible for this. You are responsible for all this stuff. How do you, I can almost guarantee you the training they receive is subpar. You know, those five police officers there, I can almost guarantee you at their applications or their time for their interviews didn't say, you know, my career, I'd like to be charged with murder later on, right? I'm certainly not justifying what they did at all. That's not the point. The point is it all systemically stems back to when you turned your back on law enforcement, this is what you got. So you got people who are dead. You got mayors like Lightfoot taking away foot pursuit policies. You can't chase people on feet in Chicago. And there are people, I don't know how possible, still show support where they're getting, what, 3,000-4,000 people shot a year, 1,000 murders every year. When do people say, we need the police? We need these people back. And now it's gotten so far down the road. How do you, you know, you're going to have to consult experts. You could never rely on these politicians to come up with a solution now. It's never going to work. You got to come to companies like ours and other people who are actually doing the work out here, taking the responsibility to employ this stuff to make sure cops go home safely, bad guys go where they belong, and say, what are we going to do now? You can fix this. You got to start at it. And unfortunately, you know, it's so funny because everyone was calling for police reforms 3-4 years ago. You know, Tom, there's no reforms. Putting watchdog groups out there to review what's been taking place, to do power DMS where guys now watch a slideshow on something that's sensitive to how it makes people feel when you use these words. That didn't really reform anything. That was not a solution. That was a gesture to say you did something. You checked the box. And unfortunately, that's what we do all the time. 35 years in law enforcement. I'm sure you've been to training, even as a new rookie cop, rookie border patrol guy. Every so often you go to a class and you're like, wow, that was really good. But 95% of it's what? This is fucking terrible, right? It's the guy gets up, the death by PowerPoint, the handouts that have been photocopied 8,600 times so they look like shit. And they say, we've done something. I guess that's my rant.
You know, look, they did the same thing, border patrol and ICE agents. And, you know, in the middle of this historic crisis, I had officers call me saying they're taking on this diversity training and inclusion training rather than dealing with historic crisis on board, which, again, is a national security issue. It's a huge national security issue. And they're busy, you know, trying to reform them in the way they think. Look, I'll tell you right now, as a director of ICE, I used to have every 6 months met with my chief officer down in Employment Equal Opportunities Office downstairs, and he'd come and meet with me and says, okay, well, here's how many supervisors you have that are white, here's how many supervisors you have that are minority. And he used to constantly beat me up, says, you need more female supervisors. And I says, I get that. I said, but you want me, let's throw a number out. You want me to have 25% of female supervisors. Do you realize it makes up 6% of my workforce? Do you take that in consideration at all? Law enforcement isn't real popular, you know, overarching with females. I says, how about we just be colorblind? How about we just take the guys who scored best on the test and best in the academy, best performance, the best rec records? We just colorblind whole system, no names, no sex, no color, nothing. Let's take the guys with most successful should be promoted. How about that? That's what I push for. But there's this constant requirement for quotas. And I'm not saying, you know, affirmative action is a bad thing. What I'm saying is, but it gets abused to the point where less qualified people are being put in positions to supervise and train people. That hurts the entire department, hurts the entire organization. So that's a constant battle. And now it's even gotten worse. I mean, I've talked to, I gave a speech the other day with a guy who's United States Air Force, a fighter pilot, who left because he wouldn't get vaccinated. I mean, this administration went overboard. Not only did all this training, that really isn't, I think, been taken out, just crazy training. But now that, you know, over the vaccine, how many police officers were released because of the vaccine? the attack on law enforcement being hit from all sides. And you're right. Who in hell? I mean, I got a son in college, and he wants nothing to do with being a cop. And no, I don't blame him. My other son is a special agent in Dallas, Texas. Proud of him, but I don't. My youngest, I don't encourage him to get law enforcement because I see the struggle they're up against right now. This, if who wants a job, you go home every day knowing that you're not allowed to do your job. I wouldn't want that job. When I came home from work every day, 35 years, I rested my head in my pillow. Right now, I did the best I could that day and probably saved some lives. But now officers are putting their head on their pillows every night saying, okay, well, I couldn't do my job again today. Who the hell wants that? So you're right. They don't get paid enough. They're one of the few professions where you got to strap a gun to your hip every day, wear a Kevlar vest, and you put your lives on line for this country every day. And the most powerful people in this country are dissing you every day, attacking you. It's a sad state of affairs. I'll say it again. I think the right guy gets back in the White House at 24. We get the right. If we can take control of Congress, we make some sensible changes that, puts these officers front and center, get them the training they need and give them the protection they need, taking away their civil liability insurance. And what the hell is that? I mean, they can be sued for everything they have, and it can be a baseless allegation, but they still got paid for their own attorney. I'm still being sued as judge director. I've been out 3 years. I'm still got several lawsuits pending against me. Because I was director of ICE, and people like to sue the government. But even the liability insurance they took away from some of these large departments, what officer can afford to hire his own attorney for if someone wanted to make a case against them? It's just terrible what's happened to the law enforcement community. And I pray that in 2 years that I hate to say it's going to take 2 years. I think things are coming to a head now, but it's going to take leadership at the highest level to change this dynamic. And I think we're 2 years out.
It's a time in history where people who have spines and are willing to stand up and speak about these things begin to attract those who are dissuaded to go into these other places. Even me, I'm sure you don't have too much context to this company or me, and that's fine. I don't find that insulting at all. It's just that not everybody knows who we are. But I often am now as a quote unquote national figure for law enforcement and even some kind of guidance and some what should we do. I could never comfortably tell somebody, look, I think you should be going to take these tests at these liberally ran cities, because there are sheriffs and chiefs all over this country who are standing up. And namely, we look to Florida. We see that nonstop in Florida. That's the trend now in Florida. You want to be a popular sheriff and you want to stand up for what's right and protect people and support your law enforcement. Florida is a place to go. And what's interesting is people are fleeing to Florida and cops. I got a friend of mine who's going to Florida on Saturday. I know the guy 10 years. He's a young kid. He's done 10 years on the job here. And I'm like, you're going to Florida? He's like, yeah, I want to go to a place where I feel like I'm supported. Now you go there, it probably feels the same, but it's the sentiment. So when you talk about using law enforcement as a political pawn and trying to target cops and not paying any attention to criminals at all, we target the police for your political agenda. What happens is they get sick of it and they know somebody else is willing to put their arms around them somewhere else. So NYPD is down 10%, 12%. Philly can't hold on to anybody. I'm talking about places. DC, they're leaving like crazy down there. And where are they going? They're going to these sheriffs, these chiefs who are saying, we support the police. Come and work here. We're still proactive. We don't care what they think. We got your back and don't worry about it. And by the way, we'll hold you accountable. This is not just some carte blanche Wild West where you can do whatever you want. But when you got to go out and do your job, you can do it and understand that we're going to get it. We had Carmine Marcino on the other day. He's a sheriff down in Florida. Is it Lee County? Is he Lee County? Carmine's a good dude. He's a bro from Long Island, right? And I think he grew up in Brooklyn. They have so many backed up applicants to go work for him. And then you got places where they can't even get people to apply. So what's the difference? Carmine just did a video with us that went viral because he said, listen, you got tattoos. I think that gives you street cred. I don't care about that. Carmine goes on the road with his people. Carmine is on SWAT calls with his people. He's the sheriff of 1700, 1800, 2000 people. And he's out there humping a black and white. I just did a class last week in Orlando, Wayne Ivey, who is... he's head of the police training commission down there. He'll be speaking at our conference this year. Wayne was on a motor detail. Guys were like, why is he in a motorcycle uniform? He's the sheriff. I'm like, he's out working. He spent the day with his motor unit. And again, do I think it's perfect in Brevard County? No, but I know Wayne personally. I know what his position is. And his position is, he's sometimes not an easy guy to work for, but he's got your back. Grady Judd will have your back. They told me, hey, listen, it's not perfect here, but if you got to get into an OIS and you're good, he ain't going to let you hang out there by yourself. He's going to show up. So when people see that, knowing the potential of being in an OIS is there, they're going to a place where they know they can do their job. And if it does happen and it was justified, they can ensure that their administration, who is powerful, will show up and have their back versus these other quote unquote assholes that are like, well, we're taking appropriate action right away. We're looking into it. It's a good, clean job. And I always tell people, get out of these places. Yeah, and that's the fault, you know?
I agree 100%. You know, and hats off to him. Brings back a lot of good memories. So I was ICE director. Every time we did a national operation, which is usually four times a year, I pick a city to go. And I grab my gear and I go either go to New York, Chicago, LA. I go out with the teams on these surge arrests. And I think it shows the men and women that, you know, you support them. And I was not there as a director. Assign me to a team. They assigned me to a team, and I just be a team member on serving warrants. And I think that's a good sign of leadership. I was the first and last director to do that, unfortunately. But, you know, I spent a lot of my time talking to the men and women. I never went to an office. I traveled around the country. I never went to an office while shaking every hand I could find and thanking them for their service. And that is another lost art from leadership. You know, how about just a simple thank you? I went to the cafeteria every day to eat lunch with hundreds of people. Just to sit there and talk to people. You know, I see someone in an elevator, I talk to them. Even if they don't want to talk to you, they see the director and they run back off in the corridor, I make them talk. Because you find out more stuff doing that. I found out more information in an elevator in the cafeteria than I ever found out in a supervisor's meeting. And that's why I think Bernie Kerik was a great commissioner at NYPD. He was one of them. He talked to him. I'm good friends with him today. He still has that personality. And I think a lot of that's been lost. I think when a lot of cities look for those woke chiefs of police, like the guy they just got rid of, who was a commissioner of CBP, the head of the Border Patrol, Chris Magnus, was a police chief out of Tucson, a failed police chief there, a woke police chief who ordered his officer in Tucson, you will not assist the Border Patrol in any circumstance whatsoever. Even though the Border Patrol is working his city streets or taking criminals off the street, I'm talking not only illegal aliens, but public safety threats. His officers were not allowed to work for him. And what did they do? They make him the head of the Border Patrol. So this whole new under control of this administration, their woke policies have really hurt law enforcement from top to the bottom. And it's just terrible. And it's not only affecting the street cops, it's affecting federal agents too. It's happening all across law enforcement. Local, state, feds, happen to all of them. It's sad. It's just, again, and I, you know, it makes me in a position where my youngest son, I won't even try to talk him into coming to law enforcement because it's a bad place to be right now.
I will shed a glimmer of hope. I'm in the field. I'm around a lot. I run into thousands and thousands and thousands of cops a year. I think on the surface, a lot of times we get very frustrated with the negative things that are going on, but there are a lot of really good leaders out there who are encouraging, enabling, and employing their people to go out and still do great police work. And I got to tell you, I know a lot of cops that still love this job tremendously, go out and do a great job. And we are talking about the realistic side of things where be careful where you choose to work because it might be very detrimental. But there are these, I would even say it's probably more than we think they are, agencies where, you know, great police work is encouraged. So there's a glimmer of hope. People often ask me when I'm on their podcast, do you think that it can get better? And I actually say to them, I actually know it can get better. We're planting seeds. I'm not here to try to convince the old guard. When you say things like, hey, shake everybody's hands, that leadership lost is art. I'm sorry, that leadership art is lost. People hear that. These young guys and girls, and they like what they hear from this podcast. We're even doing our job here doing this to ensure that the future of law enforcement doesn't behave in a way that has caused so much problems in the past. It takes a lot of courage to be a good leader and say the things that you have to say. It takes a lot of courage because there's detriment. Even me, there are people who band together against me. Very minority group here in the state. Most people appreciate what I do and across the country, who, because I'm holding them accountable, because they can't live up to the standard, we're saying this is what a chief should do. You should be compassionate. You should be selfless. You should be worried about them, not more about you and what you get for yourself. All these things are important leadership qualities. You should be ensuring that you're there for them all the time and you're providing for them. You are the daddy. You're the mommy. But when you don't act that way, and I say that, then I'm the dickhead, right? So it's wild. Oh, we're not going to that guy's class. Nobody's going to that guy's class. Why, Chief? The reality answer should be, well, because I'm a piece of shit, and he keeps telling you guys about me, and I don't want anybody to catch on to it. Even though you guys know it already, and that's why morale's gone, and that's why at this 35-man police department, we lose 3 or 4 guys a year. But that's not my fault. That's something else. Our contracts are bad. I got friends that are chiefs of police that work in some of the lowest paid areas of this country who couldn't shake a guy or beg a guy to leave their agency to go take a higher pay grade because they are afraid to give up what they have. And that's something that you can't put a price on, which is support, compassion, and leadership. The number one complaint of all law enforcement in this country is failed leadership, all of it. So when I say these things, yeah, it's detrimental, but my intention is to try to sway the future. And I got to tell you, the people who don't agree with us, they hide. They use a little power they have to try to thwart our efforts or keep people away. And those who agree with me send everybody they have. I mean, there was a chief police in here right before. Came in. The second time I met him, I met him a few years ago. I told him you were coming on. He was all fucking pumped up. So a guy like him is in here shaking my hand saying, thank you. Right? You know, and this is important stuff. And I really do think that there is hope for the future. I think that we have a group of people coming up who are persuaded when they're persuaded appropriately. So we say to somebody, you got a real shot to change somebody's life every single day you go to work. You got a real shot at doing some really good work. You got a real shot at when you get promoted, trying to change how things feel or don't forget how that lieutenant made you feel when he talked to you like you were a piece of shit and useless. Right. So this way, when you're a lieutenant, you don't ever make somebody feel that way ever again in your life. And that's got to be the future because we are not going anywhere. Law enforcement's not leaving. We're always going to have cops for the remainder of mankind. Even if we had a World War III and mankind had to be rebuilt, there would still be law enforcement in public order in these rebuilt cities. You'd always have to have somebody making sure they're protecting the people, the men and women and children who are the innocent.
With you 100%. Like I said, the number one rule in leadership, in my opinion, never forget where you come from. I think that should be the number one rule of every leader. That's the rule I apply to myself every day. I show up in an airport, there's all the directors in town, sure, I might take your bag. No, you can't take my bag. I'll carry my bag. You know, you do your thing, I'll do mine. But I love law enforcement. I'm with you. I made one promise when I retired for the second time, was that I may be retiring from this job. I'll never stop having your six. So I'm on the network every day. I'm out there giving speeches across the country, and I'll defend the men and women of the Border Patrol and ICE to the day I die, because I was a Border Patrol agent. I was an ICE agent. I know how hard their jobs are. And despite their hands being tied right now by this administration, as I said earlier, I think the pendulum's going to start swinging back the other way, and I want to be there when it happens. And if the right guy gets back to the White House, I'll come out of retirement again to serve the men and women of federal law enforcement. So looking forward to it.
I think about 400,000 people that listened to this podcast just cheered in their car by you saying that.
I had dinner with President Trump in Las Vegas probably 2 months ago. He asked me if I'd come back. I said, in a heartbeat, I'll come back for free. I'm so pissed off. And, of course, he looked at me and said, well, you might want to take that check. He goes, I made a commitment. If there's a president that comes back, gets in office, that wants to secure the border, wants to enforce our laws the way they should be enforced, I'll come back because I love this country, I love the men and women wearing that uniform on the border. I know what they deal with every day. And people, it's just like a police officer. People, you know, think, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning this morning, I'm in bed asleep and there's some Border Patrol agents standing on a dirt trail someplace because a sensor went off. So if someone's coming down that dirt trail, is it somebody just coming to the country for a better life, looking for a job, or is it a heavily armed drug smuggler? They don't know. They're going to sit there and take it out. And they're near, with 20 or 30% left on the line, their nearest backup may be 9-10 miles away. So they're brave men and women. I think there's, you know, I think law enforcement is the finest 1% this country has. And the men and women borked are, you know, under constant attack by this administration. You heard the President of the United States, Secretary of Homeland Security, attacked the men and women of the Horse Patrol. When that video first came out, it took me all of 5 seconds to see they didn't do anything wrong. But the President of the United States and the Secretary of Homeland Security slandered them from the White House podium. Imagine being a Border Patrol agent, a GS, I think they're GS-12s now, GS-12 Border Patrol agent, going home to your wife and kids that night, and the President just said, you're a racist, you're whipping black people. They never got an apology. The investigation showed they didn't whip anybody. The only people that did anything wrong that day were the Haitian migrants who entered the country illegally, which is a crime. They ignored a federal judge, a federal agent's verbal commands, which is a felony. But no one talked about the Haitians breaking the law. It's about the Border Patrol. So again, if I got a chance to come back and restore the faith that these men and women have in the system, I'll do it in a heartbeat because I love each and every one of them. Because they put that uniform on every day. They don't make a lot of money, just like most cops don't. And there's 122 of them, their names on a wall of National Law Enforcement Memorial in D.C., which I go to twice a year. And these men and women deserve for their president, the commander-in-chief, to respect what they do every day. And he simply doesn't. So the right president, I'm back in a heartbeat.
I love it. Well, listen. Tell us about the book. Where can they find the book? What else do you want to let people know where they can find you if they're looking to book you, anything like that?
You can go come to my website, homelandstrategic.com. I do consulting. I'm busier than hell. Between working for the Fox Network and I go around the country giving a lot of speeches. I just came back. I did a Trump 45 speech down in West Palm Beach with the president. I'm busy, but people want to get a hold of me. I'm at homelandstrategic.com, or you can go to tomholmanspeaks.com. The people that published my book actually created that site, tomholmanspeaks.com. You get my book on Amazon. I told somebody 2 days ago to say they were out of the books. They were reprinting them. But people want to reach out to me through one of those two websites. It may be a while to get back to you. I'm traveling tomorrow, heading back to the Texas border tomorrow. What am I doing? I'm meeting with Border Patrol agents and seeing what I can do to help them out. And, you know, just them meeting somebody that supports them means a lot to these men and women because morale is so bad. So I'm going to be having dinner with a bunch of people in mid-command structure, trying to get them to keep their heads up, and that pendulum will swing back and we'll get back to work real soon. But I'm going down to Texas border tomorrow and keep doing what I'm doing. So it may be a while before I get back. People that reach out to me through my website, but I will get back to them.
If we ever meet in person, which I'm hoping that we do one day, can you just pretend to be my friend so I look cool?
Look, you're on the right side of the issues. And I appreciate you. And, you know, what we're talking about, we're a lot of network TVs. They're protecting this administration and they attack the men and women that wear the uniform. You're on the right side of the issue. So I appreciate what you do every day with your podcast. You're reaching a lot of people. And look, we got to tell the story. If it wasn't for people telling the truth every day on podcasts and radio shows, very few radio shows, there'd be a lot less people understanding that the fight we're in right now. So I appreciate what you do every day, sir.
I appreciate you. And you never got to call me sir. I'm just a dude from New Jersey and we're not too far apart. But anyway, Tom, I appreciate you so much for coming on and doing this. It means a lot to us. Thank you so much, sir.
Good, sir.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.